You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, the weekly podcast of serialized fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. This is part 5 of The Patrician, which first appeared in the collection Love and Roman Punk. When she was 72, Clea took her grandchildren to visit the quiet streets of Nova Ostia. Bus tours still took people out there, though there were no more shops and no open thermopolium serving honey cakes and egg salad. No community of families enacting the ancient ways. "What did you do for internet?" Mercy asked, more interested in the whole thing than her cousins were. "Oh, we had Wi-Fi back then," Clea assured her, "and plenty of mod cons in most of the homes where the tourists couldn't see. But we dressed and behaved as authentically as we could when in public." "Weird," muttered Sebastian, obviously bored. "Why didn't they just digitise it, Nan?" asked Blake, who wandered through artificial landscapes all the time, thanks to his favourite gaming module. "They did eventually," said Clea. "It was just a lovely thing that existed once. It made some sort of sense at the time. It wasn't an ordinary childhood, but it was a good one." Clea thought about lamia bites on her brother's neck, of smashing gargoyles on the roofs of the city. She hadn't seen Julius in years. That list of his was getting shorter, on the rare occasions he let her peek at it. Perhaps he had killed the last manticore or basilisk already and found his peaceful reward. Perhaps. Except, no, he hadn't killed the last manticore. Clea stopped and blinked at the creature that prowled the forum, a bright splash of tawny hide and scarlet claws against the monotone buildings. Head of a lion, face of a person, though it was twisted into something quite ugly, a long, lashing, sting-laden tail. She began to laugh. "It really is a manticore. Goodness me. And he said it was a metaphor." "Is that one of your tourist things?" Seb asked in alarm. Even Blake turned off his gaming module, staring at the monster. "It's pretty," said Mercy. Clea shushed them. "Don't move. Everything's going to be fine." It was too long since she'd fought monsters. She didn't know the first thing about weapons that would work against a manticore. And here she was, armed with nothing but her handbag and 3 grandchildren. She should have thought of this, should have remembered that coming home wasn't just nostalgia and honey cakes. Nova Ostia drew the monsters to it with these old, borrowed stones. The manticore strutted closer, poised to pounce. Its human face growled. An arrow thunked deeply into its side, and then another. A third took it through the side of its head, dropping it to the ground. "This place comes with superheroes," yelled Mercy, and the boys cheered. Clea looked up, shading her face from the sun, and saw a familiar silhouette in a broad-brimmed hat standing on the roof of the Temple of Saturn. She waved, and he waved back. "Who's that, Nan?" asked Mercy. "A very dear friend," she said, and walked neatly around the manticore. "Come on. I'll show you where I used to live." It was the last time. And she didn't realise it, though every time she had seen him in the last decade, she had thought, this could be the last time. She wasn't going to live forever, after all. 72 full and healthy years, 2 children. 3 grandchildren. It had been a good life, and barely an interlude in his. "Just don't train my granddaughter up as a monster hunter," she had said to him in Paris a year ago, though she knew secretly that Mercy would probably be rather good at the task once she got over the shock. "Who do you think I am, Peter Pan?" said Julius, as if the very idea was distasteful to him. They finished sipping their wine and went upstairs together and said no more of it. That had been the last time they would speak, but she didn't know that either. Clea got the call 4 days before her 75th birthday. "Sydney," said Poppy in protest when she heard about it, "Mum, you can't. Not all the way to Australia again." But who else was going to go? At the end of a long flight, Clea met with some sympathetic police officers and morgue attendants. They apologised for bringing her all this way, and she apologised for putting them to any trouble, and what with one thing and another, they filled the corridors with empty noise. She had hoped it wouldn't be him. You always do in moments like that, don't you? A mistake, plain and simple. But she had flown a long way in the hope of proving the police officers wrong. He had carried no identification, just his notebook and her name. They showed it to her when they passed over his other belongings, a few papers, a safe deposit key, a greened bronze necklace. And there were contact details too. All the addresses she had lived at over the years, the phone numbers, each one crossed out as a new one was added. Julius had never visited her at any of her homes, never written, never called. The world had thrown them together countless times, and they were happy with that, but he could have found her any time he wanted to. There was no one else in the notebook. Perhaps there had been in other centuries, in other notebooks or wax tablets or whatever he used before the book. But in this one, there was only Clea Majora, later Clea Robinson, and the list of crossed-off items. Basilisk, Chimera, Dragon. One item was not crossed out. Gorgon. Must have been the last creature that he killed. Did his family curse not even allow him a moment to catch his breath and tidy his notebook before he fell? Clea looked down at his calm, still body. Gorgons killed by turning you to stone, didn't they? That wasn't what had ended him. His skin was waxy and grey, but undeniably human. He seemed young. 29 he'd been when his ageing stopped, if his dates were correct. So young. She did not remember when they had appeared the same age. Julius had never been one to worry unduly about the physical realities of time. He'd shown little romantic interest in her until she looked far older than he. Then again, he was 2,000 years old. Even now, she was young in comparison. "Was he a friend of your son?" asked a police officer, who obviously meant to be kind. Clea swallowed any number of retorts. What could she say that would sum up this man? "He was a friend," she said, finally. Thanks for listening. You can find me on Twitter and Tumblr at SheepMightFly and at TansyRR, on Facebook at TansyRRBooks and at patreon.com/musketeerspace. Come back next week for the final chapter of The Patrician.